A lawsuit at the intersection of Wall Street and Abbey Road.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Now the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics around the world, and how it affects us in the United States. A multi-billion dollar court battle begins today in New York. A private equity firm is slugging it out with Citigroup, the case centering on the purchase of EMI, the British-based music label whose catalog includes the likes of Frank Sinatra and the Beatles. Out of college, money spent, see no future, pay no rent, all the money's gone, nowhere to go. Marketplace European Bureau Chief Stephen Beard is with us live from London with the latest. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
So who is suing whom?
Guy Hans, the boss of a private equity firm, is suing Citi. He claims the bank tricked him into buying EMI at the height of the buyout boom in 2007. He says Citi told him there was another bidder, and that was untrue. Guy Hans says, as a result, he overpaid for EMI. He certainly did overpay. He forked out the equivalent of $6.7 billion just before the crash, and EMI has since lost more than $3
billion. That's a lot of money. It sounds like there's a lot at stake in this case, Stephen.
Yes, very much so. I mean, Guy Hans is claiming up to $8 billion in damages. And if he wins, analyst Claire Enders says, many other banks could face hefty lawsuits.
Their transactions would be questioned, and a similar sort of outcome could be imagined for the very large number of deals that were done in 2006, 2007.
Citigroup denies that it misled Guy Hans. The case, however, should shine a fascinating light into some of the darker recesses of high finance at the height of the boom.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard reporting from London. Stephen, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
Communist Party leaders in Beijing today laid out another five-year plan that's set to start next year. They've done the five-year plan thing a dozen times. And you got to remember, despite China's unbridled capitalism, it still has a planned socialist economy. As Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz reports, drafting the plan provides a rare opportunity for China's policymakers to talk about that country's problems.
Here were some of the goals for the five-year plan ending this year: economic growth, urbanizing the population, and creating jobs. Mission accomplished, says China economist Andy Xie. Now there's another problem the party needs to tackle.
Yeah, I think that the high growth has not led to better social stability. The growth model is at a point that it's not a benefit to the people.
Now that they've got a job and live in a city, many Chinese are wondering when they'll be able to afford a home. Apartments in Shanghai and Beijing are out of reach for many in China's middle class. Xie says it's an example of the widening gap between the rich and poor, a problem that'll need to be tackled within the next 5 years. Economists like Xie say an answer is political freedom. One example, a free press. Without a system of checks and balances, people in power in China end up with all the money. Premier Wen Jiabao has hinted at China's need for more political freedoms recently, but it's unclear whether these will appear in the 12th five-year plan that'll be revealed next March. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. U.S. dollar rose a bit against the Japanese yen and other currencies. That sent investors away from risky stock trading. Global markets are mostly mixed right now. European shares are higher, but Asian shares lower. The tech-heavy NASDAQ ended last week up nearly 1.5% on good earnings news from Google. We're going to hear from Apple later today. And the Dow on Friday fell 31 points to close at 11,062.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Vanguard, whose mission is to simplify investing and to help people reach their financial goals at vanguard.com/public radio. Coverage of the economy is supported in part by the Schuman Center for Media and Democracy.
The Federal Reserve meets in a couple of weeks to talk about what it can do to stimulate the economy. Chairman Ben Bernanke on Friday said the Fed will likely get into another round of quantitative easing. But a lot of folks still don't really know what that means. Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan is here to help this morning. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Steve.
All right, quantitative easing. I mean, it sounds like something Mr. Spock would be warning the enterprise about. What specifically does it involve?
Well, to those of us in the financial circle, we call it QE2, and I think it's a passenger ship. But what it involves is the Fed going into the markets and buying all sorts of long-term securities, primarily Treasury securities, which runs down the interest rate on them. Now, that's the technical explanation. The simple explanation, which I would give if this were a bar and we were drinking beer, is printing money.
That sounds great, Alan. Printing money. I mean, that's free money. But something tells me printing money can be harmful. I mean, is it too good to be true?
Well, it is. Just like free beer is too good to be true.
Yeah, really.
Printing money means that you're possibly increasing inflation, and you're certainly weakening the dollar. And the dollar has been now dropping for weeks relative to other currencies because people in the markets have anticipated that quantitative easing is coming.
You mentioned lowering interest rates, though. What about jobs? Can quantitative easing do anything to get more jobs created?
Well, the theory is if you lower long-term interest rates, it makes companies and small businesses more eager to expand, more likely to borrow money, and it stimulates the economy. And who knows, that might actually work.
All right. So you mentioned this is QE2. So this is the second time that they've done quantitative easing. Did it work the first time, Alan?
They did it last year and part of this year, and it forced down long-term rates, and it assured the mortgage market that there were people to buy securities. I mean, obviously, things are not great now, but the argument these guys make is that if they hadn't done QE1, things would be even worse than they are now. And the short answer is, who knows?
Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan with us. Alan, thank you.
You're welcome, Steve.
And finally, from Sweden, a man's laptop bag was stolen while he was doing his laundry. The bag had his computer, wallet, datebook, and library card. While he was at the police station reporting the crime, the bag was returned with everything in it but the laptop and the library card. A week later, the robbery victim then got a USB memory stick in the mail with all the files from his computer saved on it, which, of course, would restore your faith in humanity. Until you realize the thief still has your computer and your library card. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Check us out online, marketplace.org. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
Here's a choice: climate change versus high unemployment, a green tech future versus fossil fuels, new jobs versus old.
Don't create green jobs at the expense of already existing manufacturing jobs in the state.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Jobs or a greener world? You choose. Next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.